Thank you. All lines are now bridged.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the USVDI Task Force meeting. Today we'll be continuing discussions on final recommendations for the rule, and this group will be presenting at the HITECH meeting this coming Thursday. So without further ado, let me jump into roll call real quick, and then I'll pass it over to the co-chairs. Christina Carabello.
Here.
Terrence O'Malley.
Here.
Stephen Lane.
Here.
Brett Oliver. Cheryl Turney. Leslie Leonard. Ken Kawamoto. Clem
Ken
McDonald.
Is going to be late.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Ken is going to be late.
Okay.
But Hick's coming.
Great. And I heard Clem and Valerie Gray. Tina Esposito, I don't think she's going to show today, and Stephen Reedy. Okay, Christina, I'll hand it over to you.
Okay, sounds great. So, Johnny, I think, are you going to get our Google Doc pulled up? We're going to go right into the Google Doc. So thanks, everyone, for joining. We're in the home stretch of finalizing our recommendations. A link was sent out to everybody late Friday afternoon with the latest version of our draft recommendations. And today we wanted to do a working session and tighten up any content within the recommendations. I think Terry and I, with our ONC leads, have gone through and consolidated all the comments and started getting a structure in place. We do want to go ahead and try to do as much as we can today, and I'll get into the next steps at the end. But as we're going through this Google document, you'll see it laid out with just a brief intro. We added an intro paragraph on the overarching kind of recommendations and laying a foundation for the guiding principles that we put in place, which were to identify data elements from which to build the basic foundation for interoperability and to avoid data elements that seem too granular for V1 and are best left for later versions. So those are our two guiding principles. And as you go through this, each section for the specific data element has the ONC proposed data elements. And then under the ONC proposed, we have whether we're including them, revising them, or omitting them. And then we have a second section with new proposed data elements for V1 of the USVDI. So with that, I think we can dive into the first section, but I'll pause and see if, Terry, you wanted to add anything.
No, sounds great.
Okay, so I guess let's go right in. I know everybody's read it and is prepared with their comments. So I think we can, I just gave a brief overview of the intro and our approach. So going into the patient demographics, and I'm sorry, I'm flipping between screens here.
Can you make the font just a little bigger on the screen? Or give it more space on the screen?
Yeah, and I think if you...
That's not good.
That little box with the arrows at the top, kind of, it says share and see John's name, and all the way to the right, there's a box with four arrows. If you click that, it'll make it on your screen bigger.
I can do that?
Yeah.
And you're talking to Clem, you're talking to me.
Well, it's okay now.
Are the arrows?
It's okay.
Okay, good.
So, Christina, I was thinking for this overarching recommendations, we actually have three principles. The last sentence probably should be number three.
Okay. I'm going to go in and...
Actually, you want me to... I can go... I can do a change. Somebody's already in there? Okay.
I think I remember when I was rewriting this, the two concepts kind of were bunched and then the third, but that's fine, I think. Perfect.
In that third sentence, you say recognizing the burden. But I think we went beyond recognizing the burden to try to balance the burden that developers face with the potential benefits to the community.
Okay.
Or to patients.
We have that choice now, balance the burden. It's the, okay.
Yeah.
Well, in that context, when we get to some of the specific recommendations, I think we have to distinguish how much burden it'd be if they have to type them all in at the beginning, or they just keep, like you've got history of addresses, just keep the history, then it's not much of a burden.
So good point. I think this was kind of not saying that we were addressing each and every one, but it was kind of like during our discussions, the type of principles. Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead.
Okay, so are we ready to go to the next paragraph, heading into the patient demographics? I see Stephen's already typing away.
Well, I think we ought to get to the things we're asking for, and this, these preliminary discussions aren't as important, are they? Just what are they?
Sounds good.
Okay, so on demographics, feel free to let's move along. Basically, we have address and phone number saying we agreed with them, and then we added
are those
recommendations.
Address and phone number?
No, address and phone number were the two that ONC had in the draft. So our first section with address and phone number, we were saying what we agreed on. So we were just pointing to specific standards and considering an international standard for address. And then for phone number, we also agreed and pointed to the mobile, inclusion of mobile as primary and landline as secondary.
Okay. Well, I'm not. Does anyone know what that format is for the international address? Because if it this, if it collides with a fire, it's going to be moot.
We don't, and we started to inquire about that question, and even got on the phone with Steve to ask. We don't have anything that we can point to, but we are recommending that ONC do a little more research. I think there was. At some point, some comment, and I don't know all the details, but DOD had recommended use of international standards for address at one point, and we don't know what those are or the best ones, but we think that it should be considered, and that's why we left this statement very vague.
Okay.
That, the rumor had it was GPS coordinates.
Thank you, Terry.
Oh, I don't think... that's a whole other thing.
Yep. So, anyway.
So we left it vague.
You can translate. You can translate. Well, U.S. addresses, I know, are well standardized already, and so I worry and it might fit the international spec, but I just worry that we'll upset a nicely flowing thing. And with U.S. addresses, you can get GPSs. Somebody can make it happen.
Okay, well, that may be a...
So I think that statement aligns.
Yeah.
I think it's just a side info. I don't think it's crucial what we're saying here. It's just I worry a little bit about this. Been the standard U.S. address file has been being sent around for 20 years, you know, on B2, and I think it may not collide with international, but I would just worry a little bit if we're going to upheave it on that basis on some hope about something newer.
Yeah, I think this is just a look into it recommendation. They don't have to accept it. I mean, they can. They should look into it, but they don't have to adopt it.
Yeah, and
for your reasons,
these links are pointing to. I need to write a sentence so that these become footnotes. But it's basically we had pointed to U.S. Postal Service as well. To your point,
that's probably what they're using now.
Yep.
Yeah, those are the.
And
the article in the HEMA.
Okay, so the real meat of this section, thank you, Stephen, for your ongoing edits, is probably the important pieces for this section.
Okay, so are we scrolling down? Sorry, flipping. So, Johnny, I think we can go ahead and scroll down to the new areas. So we have suggestions for additional patient data elements, bulleted, and then underneath the bullets, we have each one. So if you just go to the bulleted list first. Yep, perfect. Give everybody a chance to read that.
I don't know if this is as pointed as much. It's not wrong, but I think the exchange seems like back and forth. But there's a need to have a thing where someone leaves the hospital and they'll send them their stuff. That's what I think we should be aiming for. Is that to deliver the stuff they're required to deliver, you know, to a site, which could be an email, you'd say, as you've said it there, but it could also be what do they call that? There's an address now available in, I can't remember, but a personal health record address or whatever. We should maybe put a couple more words in there to hint so that the institution could send them the data that they want to get from their hospital stay.
So, Stephen, I see this actually goes to Clem's point. Stephen, you just added preferred destination for electronic communication. First, we were adding a data element, which is the electronic communication. We had identified email address as a data element that should be captured in addition to address and pulled it aside as its own. I think the preferred destination is a different thing that we're capturing. This was a recommendation to capture that the email.
Well, but then you say this could be personal email, direct, or other site.
Right, but I think different.
And when you say site, I presume you mean like a URL address.
Yeah.
Well, or a personal
PHR.
Or their provider.
Right. Or even a gateway, you know, gateway.
Yeah.
Right, and I think some of those possibilities would be worth including parenthetically after other site. But some patients are going to have more than one of these, right? They're going to be more than happy to tell you what their email is and what their direct address is and what their PHR URL is. But one of those should be, it would be optimal, I believe, to be able to specify one as preferred.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
So maybe we want destinations for electronic communication. Oh, you say, well, I'm sorry, you have with preferred method. My bad. So
no,
that second
that.
Preferred isn't needed.
That
right?
is.
I should be in suggesting. I just added it as a way to capture it as the secondary part because we're adding the electronic communication.
I think it would be too much to say that they should encourage or it should be a specification that EMR should have a field for this, or does this sort of imply it?
Well, I think that's, you know, as soon as we put it in USCDI, that's what we're saying. The EHRs do need to have a field and be able to manage
it. Okay.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying for all of these things.
Well,
Christina,
we
I don't know.
Another parenthetical thing, this is a place where the patient's encounter, clinical medical record from that encounter could be delivered. Because that's what the care, 21st Century Cares Act says. You got to, not, they don't say do it at this level, but they should get it.
Yeah, is that, don't gateways provide the same? Or
well,
hospital?
I'm for all the options. I'm just trying to give it more immediacy to readers.
Or
this would provide a mechanism for delivering to the patient, pushing to the patient their electronic information. Right now, they got to go pull it around. They got to go looking around and finding, remembering passwords and all that stuff. I'm not saying it very well, but
no. But you're thinking including the term push. So
yeah.
For the destination for push information.
Well, but push is a functionality. It's not a data element, right? The
right.
address is a data element.
Well, I'm talking about to give kind of sharpness to this thing. This could be used or sufficient to be able to, that address would be used to push information from the most recent encounter, for example. Push the medical record data from the most recent encounter, the current encounter.
So, all right. Yeah, so this is probably URL. Okay, so we've chopped that one up pretty good. How does that look?
Progress.
Progress.
You guys are working hard.
I think we got three editors.
I don't like that we I don't like that we have electronic communications with preferred method of communication twice, but
yeah,
we can move and
but why don't we just strike
that later?
Strike the preferred method from it.
Well, but I wouldn't. You might capitalize it because that's another field. But no, I wouldn't strike it.
And we ought to add it as another field. So break
well,
those two.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I think it's sort of.
So this.
Yeah.
To do, we can do that. This is and. So Terry, did we want to do two separate? So we have destination for electronic communication as the first one, and then preferred method of communication as the second bullet because it's a different.
Yeah, and is it preferred method or is it preferred site or URL or address or
destination? It's the preferred destination, really.
All right, so just call it preferred destination.
Preferred method and destination. So first you say you can capture the destination or multiple, and then there's a preferred destination.
Yeah, yeah, and it's got to be a separate field where you mark the one that's preferred.
Yep, got it.
But, you know, I'm just nervous, but I don't want to ask for a change in the communication, which could be, you know, it's time for your appointment, or it's not the same as this is how you'll get your medical record data. Not
yep.
that it shouldn't be able to do both, but.
Yeah,
I
think it's pretty generic, though, because those capabilities are going to grow. You know, they have over the last couple of years. Now you get appointments, and then you get your lab, and then finally you get to be able to share emails. And you know,
so should we do this as plural methods, like being able to click multiple? Because I might want it sent to my email, but I also might want it sent to my PHR.
Okay, and you want to make destinations plural too?
Pretty colors.
Yeah. Good stuff.
It's funny. When I look at it on the web, it's teal and salmon. When I look at it on Google, it's pink and green. Go figure.
Yeah.
I've got different colors, so it's confusing me going back and forth. Not really, but.
And on mine,
blue and green for me.
Blue and pink. So, anyway.
Thanks. Okay.
Right.
So.
Next one?
Yep. We can go back and break those two up, but let's move through.
Yep.
You want me to work on that?
Sure. Well, you can read ahead. I mean,
yeah.
This, things are pretty
yeah.
straightforward, but the
yeah,
next one.
The next bunch are pretty good.
All right, so the next one, the consent, I think is the only one of the next few that, let's make sure this sounds reasonable. All right, so that's okay. Last digits of the Social Security can be a big deal. Then the optional identifiers, those were the any government-issued ID, which presumably requires more vetting than other kinds. Again, for patient matching. and identity.
Okay. So you guys ready to move on to provenance?
So we got self-reported gender identity. Is that okay with you?
Did we get the last four SS, Social Security in there?
Yep, it's in there.
Right. So Clem, we broke that into the Social Security number, last four, and then a set of optional identifiers,
yeah,
which kind of implies the Social Security shouldn't be optional.
Well, you know, they've stricken Social Security, though.
Yeah, well, the whole thing, but the last four.
Right, that should be not so threatening.
Well, and if they strike it, they strike it. That's okay. I mean,
yeah.
DOGA will come back, or whoever does it.
Okay. Oh, so this provenance stuff I investigated with one of the experts at FHIR, and it's different than I thought. They are recommending, but it's not totally iced. I mean, there's an ID in the actual content that can be permanent. There's still a bit of wrestling with which one would be taken as the one. You know, if you get something comes from an instrument to the lab, and the lab then validates it. And I think the direction is that it should be the one that's been final or approved for release. And then that one. But anyway, so it's a little different than what I was proposing. It's not in the provenance statement. It's in the actual data, the thing. You know, like if it's an observation, it's in the observation. If it's a drug, it's in the drug.
Okay. So what we, I think that's consistent with what we've got down here, which basically proposes adding yet another data element, which is the internal ID that system applies to the data element.
But it wouldn't be in provenance. He made a big point. It wouldn't belong there.
Well,
it's already there. And
well, that's
so
fine.
You can fuzz it and say there should be in somehow a related persistent ID without saying it's within provenance.
Yeah, so... okay, so you think the unique ID?
Well, I didn't understand the model. So what happens is, say you send a glucose. That's an observation. The provenance tells you, you know, where it came from, the things, kind of like what you have. But the ID that's persistent is in the lab test. And the same would apply to other objects within FHIR. So I think what you could just emphasize, there should be a persistent ID for the item of information without saying it has to be within provenance.
Got it. Okay. It's really what we're saying for each data element is that it has a unique identifier. Some of it is provenance, so author's organization and timestamp. Is the provenance piece. The rest of the identification comes from the unique identifier applied to the data element, which is not provenance. So we can say.
And I don't know if you want to get into it, but there's like three unique identifiers. You know, one
that's
is
okay.
I think generated, but I don't think it's worth getting into.
You know, our suggestion is that they, whatever they want to pick, you know. But we need a unique identifier.
Yeah.
And yeah, so actually what we would do is say instead of adding it to provenance, so this whole paragraph basically this area needs to be, where can I get color? So the area just highlighted in red, we'll kind of get rid of this.
Wait, you're talking about getting rid of all that red?
Well, in a sense, because the next paragraph recommending the creation of a unique participant identifier has the provenance piece, the unique local code with the data type. So the unique local code and data type are somewhere else and already being built or made.
I think you're right, Terry.
Well,
we want to make sure we don't lose, you know, the notion of being able to, you know, deduplicate data items and to tie together multiple versions of the same data item.
No, I'm for that, but I had a misconception when I was pushing for that it's already there in the actual data item. But I don't think it's totally been worked out which one you declare to be the first one, or whether you care. I mean, there's still some tangles that I don't know if we can solve, but we should be aware of to really nail. Okay, is it the very first one by time that you want? But there are cases where you don't want that one. You want the one that was approved. There's a way to say that, but it isn't yet clean.
I think the way we've got it here, you know, if we got rid of the red text, sort of summarize.
I think you're right. It's the direction.
Right.
We're not writing the software code for it.
Yeah, and they can figure it, you know, again. I mean, we can just point out we need that identifier for all the reasons, Stephen, that you say, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, the decluttering. And then the next paragraph after those four bullet points where we said that the identity will persist as the data element is shared. So that, this we're just saying that there's an initial data identifier that's created at the birth of the data element, and that persists forever. And what gets added to it is any time somebody changes that data element, we expect another label that says, this has been changed by me at this time, and this is what it was, and here's the original provenance. That make sense?
I think you're as close as we can get.
Okay, all right. That's close enough. And then I think Arian raised this point on the governance. It requires this convention requires a governance structure.
Yes.
And you know, or shared contract, it just basically says that we promise if we say the data element is unchanged, we're attesting to the fact that it remained unchanged. And if we changed it, we're telling you that we did.
Now, why are we using the term identity instead of identifier? I'm a little confused.
Identifier make more sense?
It does to me. I sort of started modifying it in the paragraph above, and then I see we continue this use of the word identity, and it just...
That's fine. I have no preference.
Yeah, I agree with Steve, but I think we got to remember we're not writing the final technical specification for this stuff. I don't think we can.
That is for sure. Yeah, that's fine. And actually, both terms were used at the high tech. And I think Arian, again, was the one who wanted identifier. Or I can't remember. Somebody wanted the opposite.
No, I think we all agreed we wanted both. I mean,
okay.
People identified the need for both.
Yeah, the subtlety flew by me. I missed it. Not sure I understand the difference. Okay, so persistent data element, and then we're on to clinical notes. Okay. I think we can go through clinical notes pretty quickly. Keep on going. Go.
Terry, we're under laboratory result narrative.
Yep.
Task force agrees with adding this note with use restricted to special reports and narrative for specific laboratory results. How do we define that better? Or who's going to define that better?
Well, the challenge really is that you get like a complete blood count. Sometimes they'll send us a narrative blob, and we kind of want a way to not say that's valid.
Let's say that then. I mean, or let's add that. Or,
okay.
You know, the purpose of this restriction is to avoid sending results that might otherwise be sent as discrete field data as a narrative blob.
There you go. Very good. We know what we want to say, we just don't know how to say it.
What was that? The purpose of this
restriction
is
to... They have a requirement for laboratory tests and values, which is structured. I don't know if we could... I don't have that in front of me, so I don't know if we could tie it to that. I think this is for, like, special narrative things that the labs put out sometimes, like really complicated reports about pathology and the like. But.
Yeah. You know, or unusual lab tests that have a range and they need to have an explanation as to why, how to interpret it.
Yeah.
You know, that,
really
that's
risky. I mean, it's really, it could be a slippery slope to all narrative lab tests.
Yeah, I think if we just say that we don't want discrete elements being sent in this note type.
Well, could we say it more and give an example? For example, a complete blood count should not be sent as a narrative note. It should be sent as a bunch of separate test results.
Yeah, I think we got it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. But you might want to just throw that in, the CBC. You know, for example, the CBC result. Yeah, I think that makes our intent clearer. Yeah. Yeah.
Could I just suggest a tiny change? Instead of saying blood count result, just leave out the word result because it's really up to 20, 30 numbers that you see. And
how about the results of a complete blood count?
Okay, yeah, the results of a complete blood count. You might also go a component such as white blood count, hemoglobin, eosinophil percent, you know, that kind of thing. Just
BLT.
We know what it all means.
Yep, and no one else will. Okay. Excellent.
And maybe after hemoglobin, you say et cetera, ECT.
Well, if you either get EG or ECT, you don't get both.
Well, the problem is EG is closed. It's not just those. So it's a, you know, there's up to 20, 30 results in a complete blood count with differential. So I don't know. I won't fight over that.
All right. That's right. They can, okay. All right. So, great. So we go beyond this procedure note. We just want to make sure the op note. Still haven't found the answer to that question, but it's kind of trivial. And then we're suggesting we add all of the rest of these. So seven additional note types. And then on the next page, we do the justification for each. You want to keep going down, Johnny? There you go. Okay. So what we're saying here is that, and Steve gave the eloquent explanation of why, well, of the fact that note types other than the CCD in the discharge summary have rarely been employed by developers. And I think the most compelling reason for that is that meaningful use allowed them to check the box on meaningful use. Not that they necessarily were the most appropriate note types for the information that was being sent. Okay.
Interesting on the where is it? Wait, did we take out the care plan document? Oh no, there, long-term services and support care plan. Yeah, this came up in a discussion I was having with the head of CRISP, but apparently they've got some sort of a care plan note that they've instantiated in their HIE that they're shipping around between users. I'm getting more details, and if I find something interesting, I'll share it back with you guys.
Yeah, actually, that's a good question. If I recall, in the original HL7 document types, care plan was one of the ones we built, and I'm not sure why it fell off our list here. It's a good point. Let me look into that right this second.
I think you're right, Jerry, but is that different from the long-term services and supports care plan? I mean, is that
yes, it is. Yeah, they're both care plan notes, but they serve different purposes.
But are they both defined already in CDA or someplace?
The care plan note is in CDA, and the long-term service and supports note is in ballot right now.
Oh, okay.
As we speak. I think
you must be involved. Are you involved in that?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, it's a very interesting process.
I know. Not always fun.
Well, 2.5-3 years, it was the TEFT grants that started it. So. But let me just get to HL7. note types.
But, you know, stepping back to advanced care planning note, is that the actual advanced directive?
Or no.
The living will?
Oh. Well, I'm sorry, advanced care plan note? Yes. Those are the actual advanced directives.
So we don't have to, I mean, it's just, maybe we should say that, you know, depending on whatever it is in your state or something like that.
Yeah, it's labeled differently. If I remember right, this is Lisa Nelson. She did this whole thing. It's really labeled as the patient's emergency care plan.
But will that be taken to be the formal advanced care, you know? I mean, is this just a note about it, or is it the actual patient's document that asserts it?
I think it would be both.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, I mean, you can always append, you know, a PDF of the signed POLST form.
Well, what I'm trying to get at is, what are we trying to convey that's needed? I'm not sure I get it. Is it someone says, yeah, we did it, and or if it's not well defined, we maybe should say a little more?
Yeah, good point.
Or is it in that URL? Does that say it all?
Well, it certainly. Yeah, the URL, I think, takes you to the wiki, which gives great depth about what's in it. So let me just see what's in. Oh, man, go ahead. So I pulled up. Procedure structured progress. All right, I thought there was a care plan note. Care plan template, maybe. Let me keep looking. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what, if I can find the care plan note, I'll add it.
So you're saying you checked that HL7 link and it wasn't there?
Well, I didn't put a link in for the care plan note, just not on our list. But I'll go back and make sure it actually exists, and if it does, I'll put it in. I'm sure it exists, I just can't find it. But anyway. Okay. All right, so we're going. And the miscellaneous note was to include anything that it hadn't thought of.
So the only thing I worry about that, it might encourage people to use that instead of the specific ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the predictive example, I would never have thought the price information would have been in that, although I think it's a great idea.
Well, I'm not sure I'm sure there probably is a data file for price information.
Well, maybe what we should say, though, is this should only include those that aren't specified in with more detail.
Yep.
Or somehow a caveat to control its...
So Terry, are you taking out then that link under the long-term services and supports care plan note?
No, that's okay. That can stay there.
That one's okay.
Yeah, that one's okay. What I haven't found is there is a CCDA document type called care plan. I just have to see it in writing somewhere. In which case, I will add care plan. These are all different kinds of care plans.
I think, for version one, it might be important for us to pick one. And I appreciate that given your clinical focus, that the long-term services and supports is a critical one. But I think that we should consider whether it's the most generic and the most appropriate to include in version one.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's not generic. It's quite specific. And it's geared for long-term services support. What is really nice about it is it has been, it's a consensus document from 9 different states who've all agreed on a common vocabulary and note structure, even though their systems work very differently from each other.
Yeah, I thought I'd heard from Lisa that there was a lot of work that had been done on a standardized generic care plan note.
I believe it is. And if it is, we can call that out.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We can...
No, they're definitely in FHIR and HLSET. I mean, not with CDA. Wherever it is, there definitely is one.
Yeah.
Yes. I would propose that we should at least include that.
Yep.
I'm not averse to including long-term services and supports care plan, but I at the very least, I do think we should include the more generic care plan.
Yep. Well, we could do on long-term.
I agree.
We can say for long-term services and supports that we recommend this for the next iteration of USCDI.
I think that might make more sense, just given where we're heading.
Yep.
Long-term care is getting a lot of good attention this month. That's good.
Well, actually, so it's currently in ballot and should be added to a later
future.
To a future
version. Yeah. Good.
Okay. That's fine. So so up here it's a All right. Got it.
So should we put in a placeholder for the care plan note?
Yeah. So actually, I'm going to switch the order since we're going to say long-term service and supports should go to a future. What did I do? I'm going to go back. Okay. So and I'll put in the care plan note. I'm sure there is one. So let's put care plan. So between transfer note and advanced care planning, put care plan.
I like it.
Okay. So we'll put something in. Okay. All right. So we'll clean that up. Let's flag that in red just so we don't miss it. Okay, is that good for the, so on the miscellaneous note, I got interrupted. So Clem, your point was?
Well, we ought to indicate that it's to be used for things that cannot, only used for things that cannot be represented in the other notes described. That is, it shouldn't be a downhill slope where they just call everything a miscellaneous note. And then you don't get the structure associated with the other ones.
That.
Although I don't know, maybe you know. What do you guys think?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's the right way.
Until standards are developed, right?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Type in what you think. Actually, not adequately.
Good. I like it. You know, it's bothered me for some time that we, I don't know if confuse is the right word, but, you know, we talk about note types, and then, of course, there are document templates, you know, within CCDA.
Yep.
And I don't know if there's any place that we need to kind of differentiate those terms. I mean, clearly note types can be specified within a document template, but some of the terminology that we've pulled in here really came out of the CCDA document template work.
Well, the CCDA does, I think the higher level is the document type, and then within each document type, there are specified templates, but you can add templates to any document type.
The terminology I'm used to is there's document templates and then there's section templates.
Yeah, document template. You're right. Document sections and templates.
Well, one of the things we'll have to be careful about though is if we are very particular that we're talking about CCDA, and FHIR is kind of ripping through and we're going
to. No. I'm actually saying just the opposite, that we shouldn't be specific to CCDA,
okay.
That we should,
I think
this is good the way we're talking about note types, but those note types end up fitting in to both the CCDA and the FHIR structures.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
again, I don't know if we need to add anything about it, but it's bothered me a little bit as we've been going through this conversation.
You know, I think the saving grace is that this is the ONC nomenclature. Since they call these data, they actually call them data elements. At the top, see what is it they call it? Inclusion of clinical notes data elements. You know, which doesn't conform with anyone's
taxonomy. Well, the word data elements is a bad one, but it's there.
It's there, and that's what they called it. So we'll just continue on, and they can, again, we'll let them clean it up. But I think our recommendation is much clearer now. Okay. Pediatric vital signs. I think we're... Stephen, as long as this has got everything you want, it's probably good.
I like the way you worded this. So did we decide that I don't think we did, but just as a reminder, that we're using height and length interchangeably as opposed to attempting to specify that height is measured standing on your feet and length is measured lying on your back. I think this is fine.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
It's a wrap. All right. Now we get into what we think within proposed data classes, the ones in the original slide that were in blue that have been proposed for V1. We had the care team. We wanted to know providers' demographics, which makes sense. And in CLIM, you know, is NPI going to be an adequate identifier, do you think?
Probably not. No.
You had something else? NPI, e.g. NPI, comma.
Yeah, because, of course, not all providers or clinicians or members of a care team have an NPI, right?
Well, wait, I'm sorry. I misheard. We could give a URL. The NPI is available to anyone who wants one. And there must be used if you bill or your organization bills Medicare. So there's not a restriction on them. We had this discussion at some other meeting. So if you want to sign up and get an NPI, you can. And
so if you're a home care nurse or a chiropractor or an acupuncturist, you can get an NPI. Yeah.
Well, I can't speak to acupuncturists. I can speak to taxi drivers because if they carry Medicare patients to hospitals, they're certainly eligible for one. I'm assuming acupuncture, if they can bill, they'd have.
Well, I mean, they bill, but they may not be able to bill Medicare. I mean, that's the trick. I mean, when you're saying anyone can get an NPI, can you only get an NPI if you truly have the ability to bill Medicare? Then I think
limited. No. There's two separate pieces. Everybody who bills has to have one, and anyone, I don't know, there must be some constraint. Anyone can get one, and you got to put in your license and whatever it is that you, you know. And it's a pretty complete, it's a pretty rich database, and you can look it up yourself. If you have people, I think the issue, nurses who aren't practitioners may not routinely get them.
Yeah, I think so. That's the trick, is because, you know, I want the care team to be as comprehensive as possible. Mm-hmm. You know, it could include a doula. It could include, you know, a lay, you know, support person.
So this is an EG, so it's the one that's already, and I'm told it costs them $3 billion to set it up and maintain it. So it's not a trivial thing, but if there's other identifiers, maybe the state license number or something like that, but then they may not be, is everybody you're interested in licensed?
It seems to me like it would be wise to move, if we can, move everybody to the NPI if they can get it, as opposed to having multiple types. So this could be a good way to kind of streamline the whole care team's identification.
Point.
Well, really, you know, it's almost, again, it may be almost like provenance. You know, we really want to know who you are and where you came from or where we can find you. You know, so if you're a home health aide, you probably don't have an MPI number, and you probably never will get one. But
right.
we know you work for a, you know,
well,
a home
aide. I just did a lookup, and I'm not sure what this gets us clear. This is all individuals and organizations who meet the definition of healthcare provider, as described in 45 CFR 170.103. are eligible to obtain a national provider entity. If you're a HIPAA-covered provider, if you are a healthcare who bills Medicare, you need an NPI. So I may not be as – I don't know how free what that definition is. I should look it up.
So under identifier, should we put EG, NPI, comma, state license, comma
– that would be the safest.
Station license.
But if you have an NPI, I'm not sure about that.
I would say license or certification.
Well, the certification.
State or other certification body, because not all these folks are certified by the state.
Well, but if you do a state certification, you got a unique ID. It's state plus.
No, absolutely. But I'm just saying there are care team roles and members that aren't going to have a state certification.
Well,
you know, because one of the other thing that's missing here, you know, and it's, I think these are key demographics, and I love the way we're going with this, but there's also the care team member role.
Yeah. And we decided probably when you weren't on the call that would be good for version two. Actually, I think we flagged that in provenance. When we're talking about the author and the author's organization rather than the author, we would want to come back to look at author with specific role groups in mind.
Yeah, but I just think we need to capture it here, too, where we're talking about care team.
The challenge, though, of capturing any human, it's not, you know, how are you going to do it? How are you going to get an ID system that works? And that's, you know, that's going to tell you what you need if it isn't one of these ones that's already required, demanded, and available. That's a massive undertaking.
So should we put role in this EG, NPI license certification, kind of role?
Well, I would be inclined to stay with state for a while because I know you can do it. I mean, you can get a number, and you can make it a unique thing if you take the state plus the other part. And, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, the person cleans up the room. How far are you going?
Yep.
With it?
I think in the future we need to go to the whole team.
Well, then it's Social Security. But even then, I guess everyone doesn't have Social Security. That they won't let you use, probably.
Everyone has Social Security, but not all of them are accurate.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
There may be more than one person in that account.
Okay, I don't know that we have to belabor this here, but we'll be coming back to it.
Okay.
Okay, and I've looked up this CFR 45 thing, and I can't find a clear specification.
Okay.
I was just doing a reference. It's the care team members data class.
Good. Thank you.
So
is it the medications data class for the next one?
And on the final thought on the care team members data class, due into kind of the expansion, right now there are no data elements under that data class in B1.
Under which class?
The care team members.
Oh.
It just has the data class, so that's kind of why we started with these first three.
That's fair.
Cool.
Yeah, I think next, you know, because someone's going to have to work out the taxonomy in a way that's consistent that everyone can use.
Let's move certification before state license so it's not interpreted as a state certification. I'll do it.
Got it.
I got it.
Anonymous Buffalo. Okay.
Is that what I am? I don't know how it does that.
You
were
a Kiwi.
I'm logged in. I can see it's me.
You were a Kiwi before.
Yeah.
And now you're
No, I think that was Christina. I think she was Kiwi.
Were you Kiwi?
Oh, it's funny. Yeah. I had to switch computers really quickly, but I might have switched animals too. Animals.
Hey, Christina, that photo that you have in Google, is that from an Iron Man? I can't quite read the T-shirt.
The parkour.
Okay.
Parkour
Very nice.
Photo.
All right. So, all right, we happy with that? Happy enough? And
yeah.
So I threw, under medications, we all sort of agreed that we did want to know when the list was reconciled and who did it. And the other thing that just came up last week is we're also missing the indication for each medication.
Ooh. Associated indication and or diagnosis.
Yeah.
I'm old-fashioned. I like actually doing it with an ICD diagnosis. But
indication or...
Yeah, but how are you going to make that happen? I mean, right now it's not required to be delivered with the prescription, so the sources are not there yet.
Well, we've been through this.
They will be.
yeah, you know, it's just like our discussion about discrete SIGs. Some systems support it, and some systems don't. You're right; it's not required.
Well, actually, I am against discrete strip, because the simple ones are already discrete, and the complex one is way too hard to put in.
Yeah, you and I just have to agree to disagree on that.
All right.
But I think for medications, it's not routinely done.
For diagnoses and indications, you mean?
Yeah. And yet it is just so essential to the proper diagnosis, the proper treatment.
Yeah, I agree. And for decision support.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't, so if we say you should put it in, there's got to be a lot more work done to figure out what that means.
I think it's one of those ones where we should say is if a medication has an associated indication and or diagnosis, that it should be sent with it.
All right.
I don't know that we can specify that the receiving system will be able to ingest it or utilize it, but it should be sent.
I just put it down as it is and leave it. I mean, it's going to be a political decision about how much work that's going to be. And I think, you know, our recommendation to ONC is they make it happen. ONC may determine that this cannot be done.
I mean, so, I can tell you, I've only been using an EHR every single day for 20 years, and every med I've ever prescribed has an associated diagnosis.
Good for you. You are...
Is it the visit diagnosis?
No, not necessarily. It's the medication diagnosis.
Good for you.
And you put one in for every...
Every single med for 20 years.
Yep.
So I know it can be done.
When I send people, when I discharge them from the nursing home, I do the same thing every... So my discharge summary includes the associated diagnosis.
Well, I used to put it into the SIG, the street tech SIG, and then the pharmacist would put it in the bottle all the time.
That's a nice thing too. Again, I think in either case, it's helpful for the patient. It's helpful for anybody who receives the care transition.
Oh,
it's helpful for decision support. It's helpful for quality monitoring.
We have to break.
Text. It gets hard when you got to figure out the coding system.
I think we have to break for public comment. And if there isn't any, we can come back and do the last missing data class. How's that? So we can ask the...
Great.
Lauren or anybody?
Hi. Operator, can you open the line for public comment?
Absolutely. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your comment from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys.
And did we have any additional members, task force members join that I missed on roll call? Did Ken join? Okay, thank you. Did we get any calls in, operator?
No public comments at this time.
Okay, thank
Great.
You.
Thank you. So let's go.
There's a public comment in the chat that I wasn't paying attention to from Becky.
I'm pulling it. I just pulled it and put it into the, it was during the discussion in the care plan note.
Thank you, Becky.
Yeah, thank you. There is a care plan. Thank you very much. I'm glad someone can find it. Thank goodness. Yay. All right. Good. So our last paragraph, and this is, let's have each of us read it. And really, the two questions I have is, A, is this important? And B, is this phrased the right way?
So I'm not enthusiastic about this quality measure thing. It interacts with so much.
Yep.
And I think we could make things worse. I mean, if they clean up the quality stuff, that would make it easier. But right now, there's nothing that couldn't be quality.
Well, in order to clean it up, I think you got to sweep it in the big pile first.
But who's going to do it? Are we going to
Well, the question is, would it be important to do?
I'm not sure why it's important. I think quality needs more work than just getting the elements together.
Right. So I was thinking more of the intersection between clinical care, which is what we're trying to specify data elements for, and quality measurement. And so the latest generation of quality measures are basically the electronic quality measures, which come directly out of patient care, out of workflow, and use the same vocabulary that were used clinically, as opposed to having to go back into your system and search through numerators and denominators.
What was your goal, to make it simpler? Because this, I sat through the decisions about this, and it was insane. Because what happened was, they started out with some fairly simple rules, and then people worried about the exceptions, which ended up being 50 to 200 or 300 data elements, and that came out of the big healthcare groups because they wanted to have the best possible score. But the workload that was required to do that was nuts. So.
Yeah, and it is nuts. And the more exclusions you have, the less it's a quality measure than it is a, sort of a poll on who's doing what.
Anyway.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm feeling uneasy about this one, but I'm not sure.
I still support it. I think that there are really important use cases for exchanging quality data between payers, providers, patients, you know, et cetera. And I think the idea of flagging those data elements and kind of being able to group them together would lead to, you know, the way this was originally proposed, which was having some sort of a standardized payload and or methodology to move this data, because we need to move this data, you know, whether we're talking about fire or documents or V2, you know, this data needs to move today between different stakeholders. And being able to lump it all together, I think, is important. And I think the way Terry phrased this, where, you know, we may already have data items that are used for quality measurement, but there might be new data items that we want to add to USCDI that come in primarily because they're used for quality measurement, and then might subsequently have other uses as well.
Well, I don't see
the harm in this. I don't see that this creates a lot of added burden. I think it's really kind of just a logical way to keep track of these items and group them together.
But most of them are virtual. That is, these are not elements that are structured elements when people end up doing it. They do it by manual, half of them, two-thirds of them now. You read the
chart. Well, the manual part is just pulling them out. I mean, when was the last time they had their blood pressure checked? What was their last, you know, LDL?
Those are good ones. But you got all these other things that are just findings that they read through the chart to find to make their measures good. And I think that's... If you got to put those in a structure, you're really going to kill the practitioner.
I think we want to go the opposite way, Clem. I think we want to start with what's in USCDI, see what we've got that can be used.
Well, let's say it that way. We want to simplify quality and make it depend on existing structural data.
Yes. Simplify and standardize.
Well,
write that in.
Now, I think it'll be a phishing trip to find even more stuff you got to code.
No, this is stuff that's already in USCDI. We're not asking for anything more.
Well, then the next layer is that stuff that's already in the EHR that isn't in USCDI and that everybody's coming up with their own way to do it, as you say, picking through the charts manually.
Yeah, which is really absurd. But
the messy space, I don't think getting in it will make it better. Well,
I think the first step, we ought to propose the first step. Whether it ever gets beyond that, whether it even gets the first step, I don't know. But I think this offers a pathway for ONC to begin to get their arms around the whole quality measurement space. And I think it's got to start. You know, we've got to start somewhere.
Well, then I think you just stated a little more strictly. You're looking for things that are discrete elements that are now being transmitted in clinical systems that you could depend on. Instead of saying, let's find everything we can think of.
Ready. In
we'll open
US.
Up a committee. We'll have stuff up the wazoo. Physicians will never get home at night.
Well, but the whole point about using specified data elements that are in USCDI, they will have to be in the EHR, and then they can be pulled in the background.
Well, then I'd say existing structured data. UCDSI is not that specific even now. You know, it's like categories of stuff. So I think if you said that a structured elements that are currently buried in medical records and are part of USDI, then I'll be more supportive, more enthusiastic.
Okay, so, all right, we'll add it in and figure out how to put it somewhere. All right, the anonymous Kiwi is still there. structured data elements that are part that are currently in USCDI or that are in the USCDI.
Well, I think you want the structured word in there and that are in electronic record systems too, because UCDI has some fuzzy parts.
Well, yeah, but we want to, I'm thinking, no, I hear what you're saying, but I'm thinking that if our only lever is really USCDI.
Okay.
So, yeah, we can add, we can propose new elements for USCDI, but we can't really.
I'm not aiming to make data collection greater. I have physicians hating me because I developed electronic records back in the old days, and that people thought it was a good thing, and now everybody hates me.
But again, Clem, I don't think we're talking about asking physicians to enter any more data here. This is data they're already entering. Sometimes they're earning it in free text and spending millions of dollars to have somebody read it and fill in a box.
But free text isn't bad. So are you saying they're going to have to code it? That's work.
I think by including it in USCDI, we're not saying that, we're not specifying who has to code it. And someone is coding it today because they're using it for quality measurement, for quality reporting. That work is happening.
Absolutely.
What we're saying is when that work happens, we want to collect the data and be able to exchange it in a standardized way, format, methodology. Again, we know this stuff is being collected and coded because it's being reported. So I don't get why we would think that it would create a new burden. This burden already exists. Standardizing it should lower the total burden.
It'll get passed to the physician. All the other stuff has.
Yeah, whole idea is let the EHR do this work. Don't let the poor physician have to do it.
I know, but that's been the magic we've sold for the last 10 years, and it's
well,
a burden.
So, Christina and Terry, we are out of time.
Okay.
At this point, so I don't know if you want to wrap up with a few more, another word or two, before we have to sign off.
Good work, everybody. We will clean this up and get it out again, and we'll have one more shot at it. So if you'd like to add any more comments or edits tonight, up until noontime tomorrow. We will greatly.
Thank you guys so much. Just remember, perfect is the enemy of good enough.
Yeah, right.
Thank
good
you.
Enough is fair. So anyway, let's just do what we can do. Okay. Great. Thank you all.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks. Bye, all.